Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. You know, after a couple months of hiatus, I am so pleased to welcome back our good friend and frequent podcast guest, Terry Hershey. In today's show, Terry and I discuss a mostly American need for the overuse of superlatives in our daily speech. In this episode, we talk about words like great and best and favorite. Think about it. Why is it when asked, how are you doing, we commonly fall back on the phrase, great, I'm doing great. How can you be doing great all the time? Terry suggests that we might be better off if we were to simply give ourselves, check it out, the permission to be ordinary. And with that ordinary, Terry goes so far as to suggest that the ordinary is the hiding place of the holy. Oh my, that is so true. Please enjoy our conversation with my ever so insightful friend, Terry Hershey. Hey, Hersh. Been a while, buddy.
Charles.
What's up, man? It has been a while.
Well, actually, I went back to work for a living, traveling. So that was a whole new adventure for me.
Do you care to elaborate, or do you want to just leave it at that?
I made a living going out and giving speeches. So
yes.
That meant I went to an airport, I got on a plane, I went someplace, gave a speech, and came home. And I did that for, 35 years or something?
Yeah, and made a little money and sold a few books and got your name out there.
Yeah, you do that. And then now for 16 months, I haven't had any of those events because of COVID. And so this was my first event in 16 months.
So what was that like?
It's like the realization that getting on a plane is not as fun as I thought it was in the past.
Well, you're no longer, the Admiral Supreme of Supremes, and so you always get clubs and first class. You don't get that anymore, so you're like the rest of us travelers now.
Well, there's that interesting phenomenon where those of us who travel a lot, because, you measured your well-being based upon the cards you carried, which were all status-based. Yeah.
You know, that is true.
Absolutely.
Because I was in that, I traveled never as much as you did, but I traveled quite frequently. And so I had cards and I would always be upgraded to first class and I would have the nicer places in hotels. And that was always a plus. It was a status game as well. And that's kind of what I want to chat about today, Terry. I'm going to talk about the wonders and the necessity of a simplified life. I know lots of people are talking about it and writing about it, but I notice very few people, if any, are truly endeavoring to live a simplified life. Do you find that as well? I mean, people talk about it, but doing it is a different story.
Yeah, there is no doubt about that. Rabbi Abram Heschel said that we teach our children how to weigh and measure. Perhaps we should teach them awe and wonder. I mean, that's so appropriate to the culture we live in, because everything about identity in this culture is predicated on weighing and measuring.
It is. And boy, that was a wonderful segue, because that's exactly what I want to talk about. I want to talk about weighing and measuring. And I want to talk about it, if I can use what sounds like a PhD dissertation. I want to call it sans superlatives, and I want to call it losing superlative. We can't talk. It seems like we can't talk anymore without losing superlatives. That everything, not necessarily everything, Terry, but so much is based on words or phrases like, oh, this was great, or this was the best, or this was my favorite. And that is such limiting speech, because it limits it to a single event. For instance, I was at a kind of a vacation and a number of people there. And I was asked two or three different questions. One, what is your favorite movie? What was the best concert you ever attended? And I just finally said, I don't believe in favorites and best, and I don't believe in the word great, because I like so many things. If you want to know about my movies, I can give you my 10 or 15 movies that I think are really worthy movies that moved me. But could I give you one single movie? Could I give you one single concert that I went to that sort of represents me? Absolutely not. I cannot. I can perhaps create a list, but that's not even important. You know, maybe I've quoted this so many times, but it is worthy of quoting. And B.B. King is quoted as saying to, or is known for saying, I don't know if it's apocryphal or if it's true, but or if he really said it, but it is true. And when he was talking to young guitarists, advice to them was, don't try to be a great one, just try to be a good one. And that just always resonated with me, Terry. You know, why be great? Just be good. Just, you know, and good is, my goodness, good is good.
Yeah. Well, there's that quote that the great is the enemy of the good.
Oh, I'm not familiar with that.
Of course, I'm listening to your thing about what's your favorite on whatever it was, movie, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, my humor in those kind of settings is I'm not sure, but as a person who's been married several times, you can ask me which was my favorite wife, and we can get started there.
And if it's not your last one, you're screwed.
Yeah. here's my best story, because this is a theme I talk about in lots of my last book was called The Gift of Enough.
I love that title.
Yeah, here's the story. Tim Hansel, I don't know if you remember Tim, but
I do.
Back in the day, he was at Azusa Pacific, Southern California, when you and I were both down there doing stuff. And he used to do workshops and lectures and stuff. And he wrote some books. And one book was, he's not with us anymore, but one book was about parenting.
I did not know that.
Yeah. He had two boys. So in getting ready to write the book, he said to his two boys, how do you know dad loves you? And so this is the story he tells in the book. He thought they'd say, dad, we know you love us when you took us to Disney World, like for 10 days. And they didn't say that. So he said, I knew I wasted all that money. And he thought they'd say, dad, remember Christmas and brought us all that stuff. And they didn't say that either. And what they said was, dad, we know you love us when you wrestle with us. And so he remembered two times he'd come home. He was hungry. He was tired. He was late. He didn't care. And these two urchins are jerking on his pants. So he rolled with them on the floor toward the kitchen just to get them out of his way. And he said, then it hit him in the middle of that very ordinary. There it is. In the middle of that very ordinary, very boring, very mundane experience, real life was happening. In fact, real joy was happening, real intimacy was happening. In the middle of that very ordinary, very boring, very... He said, but I missed it because I was only tuned in to your, words, the great, the Disney World. And there's nothing wrong with Disney World. And
no,
Christmas,
no, there's nothing. They're wonderful.
They only have meaning with the wrestling times.
Yeah. You have been writing and talking a lot about, have you not, or have I been reading it somewhere else, but about ordinariness, you know. You talked about the holy in the ordinary, and Paul, our producer,
my thing is the ordinary is the hiding place of the holy. And if you're on, that's why, in speaking of your thing, we live in a world, I mean, social media is exactly what you're talking about. Social media is predicated on great. In other words, do you have the most likes or the most of anything? And so ordinary, you don't post ordinary on social media.
Well, if you're ordinary, you don't post.
Yeah, it's true.
I think it is. Is it insecurity? Is it the need to be, maybe from our insecurity, we need to be special rather than just be regular and a part of everyday life. I mean, that is where you know, Teresa, Julian of Norwich talks about all of these fabulous mystical experiences with God, but she talks about them, if they're not translated into ordinarily real life, they don't mean anything. They're nothing. They're
right.
Just, there's something to write about and talk about and say, isn't that wonderful that I had this, you know, this great spiritual experience, instead of saying, I just had this normal experience where I talked with somebody and we communicated, we conversed, and we sort of attached to one another.
The thing is, if I go into whatever my experiences are of this day, and if the attachment of my well-being is predicated on what I either do and or accomplish, and the accomplishment then is therefore I have to produce something either great or best or et cetera, if that's a part of, then I'm always on edge and always asking, is it enough? And I miss every stinking ordinary wonderful event. And the thing about ordinary is, if you park in ordinary events, then that gives birth to gratitude.
Precisely. I was just thinking that word. I agree that it gives birth to gratitude, appreciation, and a fuller sense of enjoyment, because you don't have to be playing a game at it. I notice, you know, those words, great, favorite, best, are all very limited words. They are limiting, and every motion cannot be great. Every one cannot be the best. There's only one that can be the best. Why do I want to limit my life to that? Why do I want to limit my life to only one experience, rather than a whole daytime, a whole day or week or month or life of truly with gracious gratitude, enjoyment, looking at the wonder of the everyday? That is not possible with great, favorite, or best. Those words are way too limiting.
So the thing for me, the paradigm shift for me is the permission to ask different questions.
Oh.
And that is, for me, I mean, the questions I literally ask people are, what did you see today that made you glad, that did your heart good? What happened today that made you smile big? What made you glad to be alive? I mean, these are the questions I ask.
They're difficult questions to answer, Terry, because we are not trained. They're completely out of our scope of understanding, because we are taught that there needs to be a certain different, unique, special, great aspect in order for anything to be declared worthy of conversation.
Well, I'll tell you what, though, I'm going to ask them, and people answer them, even if they give you a blank stare. That's fine. And that's part of the deal, is because I need to be given the permission to ask questions about the ordinary being the hiding place for the holy. I just need to do that. My favorite thing back in the day, you know this because you were a part of this similar kind of scene. Southern Cal was a part of this kind of scene. Remember back in the day when the churches, what are those things called where they put letters out by the thing? What's that called?
They put letters out by the thing.
On their signs. You know, the churches that put letters on their signs out by the road?
They put letters on the signs?
Oh,
a message board, you mean?
Yeah, the board, you know, where the name of the church is on it, and each, it's like an old movie theater, you know, where you put the new letters each time.
And so you're putting like what the sermon title is and that sort of thing?
They would do the sermon title, and sometimes they would put a quote, et cetera.
Oh, yes.
But one of my favorites is the churches that put on their sign, fastest growing church in America, or fastest growing church in Orange County, or fat, you know, in other words, they were the number one, right? And I always, even back then, I always thought, wouldn't it be great if somebody put on their church sign, the 96th fastest growing church in the state?
You know who did that? You know who did that in the novel? Pat Conroy did that in a novel in Prince of Tides. When he attended his therapist lover, when he attended dinner with her husband, and he was not the best violinist in the world. He was not the second best violinist in the world. He was the seventh best. I remember that. He was the seventh best. And I liked that because you know how good you have to be in all the world to be number seven? You got to be pretty damn good to be number seven. But he was the seventh.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying, wouldn't it be great on your church if you put, we're not the fastest growing church in the state, but you're welcome here.
You're welcome here. Yeah, that's I love that. I love that, Terry. I was looking I was thinking about something as you talked about our tendency toward this. Do you think this is universal, international, or do you think this is a very American way of thinking?
Well, it's fundamentally Western. There's no doubt about that. Now, I don't know enough about Asian culture. I mean, there's a drivenness to parts of Asian culture.
Yes.
But I don't know enough to know how their messaging sinks in. But there is something about us that there's something about Western culture that predicates your identity and well-being on performance. There's zero doubt about that.
Oh.
And that's why. That's why, you know, if you were great at one time, then, and you don't perform, then you're past your prime. See, then you have a new label for who you are.
Oh my goodness. I haven't even thought about that, but of being past your prime. What does that even mean? What does prime even mean? Now look at Eugene Peterson. I think he did some of his best work in the last decade of his life.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a great illustration of this is Jimmy Carter, because you know he got hammered as a president, and so all kinds of things about, and then he was measured and weighed about what kind of president he was, what he did, and in other words, that his whole value was into that. And so what Jimmy did is he just went on with his life and worked with Habitat for Humanity and built houses.
Yeah, built houses and being married to the same woman for 75 years. Yeah. Jimmy Carter is the most, in my mind, the most successful past president that certainly in our generation.
Yeah, but I mean, just he's a perfect illustration of that. He didn't take to heart the measurements about whether he was the greatest or the worst. In other words, he didn't take that to heart. He just took his hammers and nails and started building his Habitat for Humanity house that he was on that day.
Okay, I want to tell a story. I want to ask a question, then I want to take a break. Is it too early for a break, Paul? I was, the high school my son played baseball at was in the CIF finals, which is CIF is California International Interscholastic Federation. And so it's like the championship of Southern California. They were a very good team. And we were standing in line to attend the event. And I was with a woman and her 10-year-old son who were standing. I wasn't with them, but we were standing in line together and chatting because it was a 20 to 30 minute wait to get in. And she found out my son is a professional baseball player. And so she had questions, and her 10-year-old son, 10, I mean, this is a young kid. 10 is a young kid in my brain. She had hired for him because he's a good catcher and he can hit a little bit. He has a professional catching coach and a professional hitting coach at 10 years old. Now, I have no problem with young kids getting expert advice, and they can help them on their fundamentals. My son, you know, happened to attend, what do they call them, training sessions that at 5 years old, they were group learning sessions where he learned the fundamentals of catching, and that really helped. But it had no intent of, you know, he's going to go to college or he's going to be a pro. And now all this kid can think about at 10 years old, Terry, and he has until he's 18 years, he has eight more years going, that all he thinks about is getting a scholarship to a D1 college or getting drafted. You know, I feel like he doesn't even enjoy the experience. And I told him, son, you know, that's great that you're coaching and you're dedicated to your sport. I really appreciate that. I appreciate your hard work. That's really tremendous. But truly, especially at 10 years old, you have only one goal in baseball. Oh, what's that, coach? Have fun. You're 10. Mm-hmm. It's a game. Enjoy this. Enjoy every second of it, whether you get a home run or a strikeout. It's part of the game, and yet this kid is being denied that. And do you know how many kids? I only know baseball. I don't know the other sports. But do you know how many kids, that's all they can think about is making the big leagues? And do you know what the chance of making the big leagues is? It's zero to none.
Yeah.
The ones that make it are lucky, and the ones that sit on the bench, I tell people, are the best athlete you've ever met in your life. The ones that do not make the starting team are still the best athlete you ever met in your life. And that's wants to be your goal. It's an unachievable goal. I mean, you know, there are the, you know, ultimate 5,000 people in the minor leagues, of which only 700 play in the big league. So even if you're drafted, the chances of you playing professional baseball or big league baseball are very limited. And I found that to be very, very disappointing. And yet, that is true of the arts. I know people go to art school and, you know, singing classes. They all think they're going to cut a record. It's just not going to happen. And we live in a world where just being good and enjoying this and doing it well and perfecting your skill. I have no problem with perfecting your skill. I don't like incompetence. I like competence. But to keep there's got to be a sense of joy in it. And I think that's my issue. There is a sense of joy.
All right. Are you taking a break now and then I'll respond?
No, respond and then we'll take a break.
What I want us to talk about after the break is, I mean, the story of Naomi Osaka. I don't know if you may not follow tennis, but she's the best woman tennis player on the planet right now.
Oh, is she? No, I don't follow tennis. No.
Yeah, and so at one of the recent tournaments, she at the press thing, she said, "No, I'm not going to do the press thing." And so she got absolutely hammered. Her thing was that because she has her own sort of emotional dynamic issues, that she's, in other words, she was taking care of her emotional well-being. That was first to her over, because then she was kicked out of the tournament. That was first to her over being the best player in the world.
Why was she kicked out of the tournament?
Because she didn't do the press conference.
Oh, this was before a final.
No, she hadn't made it to the final yet. She would have, but...
Oh, that's what I mean. But she was kicked out of the tournament because she wouldn't do an interview?
But the point is, there have been, I mean, since that time, there have been more and more athletes who've come forward and said, I wish someone would pay attention to my emotional well-being. I wish I could be honest about stuff that I'm struggling with and dealing with. And it's the same thing, I mean, this little boy. This is not going to be an easy road for you to want to be great, which is good. But you have to pay attention to this other part of your life, too. It's a big deal. Your word is having fun. That's the whole point. There's a part of your emotional well-being that's predicated on fun. If it's not fun, it doesn't really matter if you're the best.
That is precisely true. And I want to continue on that. I have kind of another take on this that I want to do after the break, and I'm going to get spiritual on this, and I want to because I think it's very important. Our, you know, no matter what your spiritual or your religious tradition, this is not specific to any tradition, but this is specific to life itself, and I want to talk about that. So let's take a brief break here, and we'll be back. Hi, all. This is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And today, we are fortunate to have my good friend and brilliant podcast guest, Terry Hershey. And we are talking about our habit of living life in the world of superlatives, that everything must be great, best, favorite, tremendous, off the charts, when the beauty of life is found in the ordinary. And what I want Terry to do now, because he has spoken of it on this podcast and he's spoken it on previous podcasts, but never fleshed it out. I think the spiritual life has a lot to do with the ordinariness of life. And we have even made the spiritual life to a great spiritual life. You know, what is your prayer life like, and what do you do like? And rather than just ordinary living and appreciate the interrelationship with the divine, whatever that is to you. So, Terry, on the spot, flesh out holiness in the ordinary.
Charles, good to be with you.
It was a nice discussion until you asked that.
Yeah, it was a nice discussion. Unfortunately, I was actually hoping that this was going to be one of your greatest shows.
I know, isn't it the truth? I wrote to myself, I think I even wrote in the conclusion, I will be shocked if I don't use the word great as an adjective in this discussion. Well, that was great, Terry.
You mean my statement that the ordinary is the hiding place for the holy?
Correct.
This has to do with your paradigm. What is your paradigm? I go hither and yon with my thinking here, but that's the irony with what bugged people about Jesus, is he messed with their, I mean, if he was going to be the Messiah, he should have been the best and the greatest in all that he did, and he messed with people. He hung out with people he shouldn't hang out with. He spent time doing stuff, kind of bending their rules. He simply stopped to just do nothing sometimes.
Oh, many times.
So,
yeah.
Many times. The English word is being grounded. Where am I living in the sacrament of what is the present moment? In other words, the whole thing about be here now. And it's a simple little sentence. Little boy said to his mama, "Mama, mama, listen to me, but this time with your eyes."
You've said that before, and I've never quite caught all of that. Can you tell me more about that? Is that
how many times have you been with your kid where you've been distracted, and all they wanted you to do was just look at them?
Oh, it's funny. I had a conversation with a man today. I found myself listening to him, and I'm working very strongly on improving my listening skills. I never said anything until he was completely done, and he did much more talking than I did, and I just was asking questions. I can't tell you, that guy just said, what a great discussion. That was so rewarding for me, because I was curious about his internal state of being. We were not talking trivia, we were talking about who he is as a person internally. And I just showed extreme interest in that and let him explain it to the fullest rather than trying to offer my opinions and my suggestions and my advice, like, who am I, rather than just saying, I want to focus on who you are and be one person that really cares who you are and what you're going through. Is that sort of the sacrament of the the holiness of the sacred present?
That's a big part of it. In other words, I'm here now, because now is all I have anyway. I'm here now, and I'm not here. This is important. This is the whole back to the beginning quote. I'm literally not here to weigh and measure it. I'm here for awe and wonder. I'm here for delight and gladness and gratitude. And if contentment comes out of that, well, that's great. That's frosting on the cake. But start there.
I like that so much, and I can't repeat it, so I need you to repeat it, because I think you just said maybe the quote for the whole podcast that I really liked. Explain that to me again.
How did it start?
it was about the sacredness of the present.
Because back to the beginning quote is that if I weigh and measure, then I'm always asking myself, did I do enough, or should I have done more, or oh my God, wasn't that awesome? I was the best, or I was better than them, or that was the best listening I've ever done, or even I've done the same thing, or that was the best speech I've ever given. When in fact, I'll walk off the stage and say, that was the worst I've ever done. Someone will come up to me and say, thank you for being real. Not because I said that sentence, but because something in the speech spoke to them. In other words, if I spend all my energy weighing and measuring, which has nothing to do with whether I couldn't be better at speech giving, that's not the point. The point is how I anchor myself to this moment. If I spend all my energy weighing and measuring that my well-being is predicated on whether that met a 9 or a 10 on the scale, then I have no space for awe or wonder or delight or gratitude or contentment or joy or curiosity. None of that is available to me.
You know, I love your warning of weighing and measuring, and that is, I think, those two nouns are just major emphasis in our culture today, is that we want to weigh and measure everything. Like, even in my podcast, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, you know that from the podcast, because you actually do. We all do it. In other words, well, that wasn't good or that was good. And I get the part where I can say, I can do this differently. But your son experiences this in a dramatic sort of way, because they have statistics down to minutiae about weighing and measuring. But none of that includes the kind of personality you are with other people in the clubhouse. None of that includes the spirit you carry around you when you talk to people. None of that includes how you pick yourself up from something that's... In other words, there's other things to deal with here.
You know, my son is I'm glad you brought that up. My son is a really good example. And since most of my listeners probably don't know exactly who my son is, this will be, you know, I'm not talking out of school, but my son is by many people saying one of the very best defensive catchers in baseball. And some will even say the best, but he is terrible at hitting. And he recognizes that. He works on that. He believes that one day he's going to strike the ball and he's going to rake and he's going to be okay. But he doesn't obsess over it. He works on it. He doesn't obsess over it. And the heat he has to take, Terry, there are teams that want him because they know his defensive catching is more important than his offensive catching. That when he catches, the team gets W's, they get wins. When he doesn't catch, they don't get wins. And at the end of the day, all you're looking for is wins. And he's been able to reconcile that. And so he is a happy and contented young man. I just read in the news of his team that there were several players that saying, who do they admire most on the team? and the number one player on the team said he admired my son most because of his energy and his encouragement and how he is always positive, no matter if he goes 0 for 3 or 0 for 4 or 4 for 4. He's the same person, and he has worked on just flat enjoying, loving playing baseball. He loves being out there on the field, and you know, he wants to be as good as he can in his performance, but he knows what his performance is what his performance is, and he's fully accepting of that. I'm very proud of that he's overcome this, because there's a lot of players that, because he gets a lot of negative press on this, and fortunately he doesn't pay much attention to the negative press, but they all want you to be perfect at everything. And he just realizes he can only be good at what he can be good at.
Yeah. I think that, yeah. Yeah, and I'm 100% in approval of that.
Yeah, me too. Me too. He's a fine young man. Now, you know, I want to wrap up our time here, because I think we've covered so much, and we don't need to have an extremely long podcast here, because I think we've covered some really fine material. But there is a word that fits into this discussion we are having, and we've talked about it a bit, but there's a word that has become part of the American vocabulary, at least in my circles, has become a part of the American vocabulary. And that is great. Everything has to be great. Terry, how are you doing? Great. Really? You're doing great? What in the world does that mean? Because very few people are really doing great. They're doing, I want to replace great with good. I'm doing well. Life is good for me. Good is almost an unacceptable term nowadays.
Yeah, part of the thing about that is that we also have a system where much of the conversation with the first three or four sentences is predicated on not necessarily what is real, but simply the way we've decided to talk to each other. And so that back to my paradigm shift. When people ask me, I literally have to respond this is my paradigm shift. I will respond to that with what I consider to be an honest sentence. In other words, then I will say to you, how are you doing today? I will say to you, I want to make it an honest sentence. I will say to you, I'm having a decent day. In other words, that's an honest sentence. Or I will say to you, I really like the weather. In other words, I want to say something honest. Now, I'm not going to tell them I'm off the deep end today, because that's not their deal. But my point is, my paradigm shift is I want to say something honest because it anchors me to what is real in the ordinary moment now. Well, I'll say, I'm glad the sun is shining. In other words, that's an honest sentence.
You know, I had a day today when I entered. It was funny, Terry, because I've heard this preached so many times, but today was an excellent example of it. When I went into the bathroom, we have at the, you know, at 7 o'clock in the morning, we have a morning light shining in our bathroom window, and it just, the whole bathroom seemed to be lit up with joy. There was something about the sun shining, and so one of the best things of my day today was simply the sun shining through my bathroom windows. It just gave me,
right.
It gave me such a sense of pleasure and such a sense of ease.
Right.
And then we live with the pressure. If we don't live up to these magnificent titles and greatness, I love your idea of weighing and measuring. We weigh low on the scale, and that must mean we are somehow less than. And there's just too many people feeling somehow less than. And that is,
that's a damn shame. That's the thing that drives me nuts, is that the answer to that is therefore connected to our self-worth, our value, and our self-esteem. And that's where we go wrong. Or that's where we're definitely detrimental. And Charlie, how are you doing today? I saw the sunlight this morning. It was awesome. That's good. Boom.
And it lasts. As I thought about it, as I'm telling you, I can feel that feeling again. I can feel that content.
See, because it connects you. It grounds you. It connects you to being alive. It connects you to be in your own skin. It connects you to what is sacred, because there's something sacred in all of that, even if you don't understand it.
Well, what do we do, Terry, when we are in our employment, in our jobs, and in our careers? The philosophy is about, it's all about weighing and measuring. And so we have to go through so many hours a day of which we're judged, we're evaluated, we're given critique on how well we're doing this or how poorly we're doing this. And so we are constantly in a situation of, constantly in a place of being weighed and measured. And we need to make a very conscious effort, in my opinion. It would be very helpful. I don't even want to use the word we need, but it would be very helpful if we could divorce ourselves from that and say, okay, this is what I have to put up with, and I'm going to do my best, and I'm going to honor my contract. I'm going to honor my agreement. I'm going to be a kind person. I'm going to be a helping person. I'm going to be a productive person. Am I going to be great at it? Shoot, I don't know. I just know I am going to do my best to do my assignment. And there's just not, you know, a lot of people doing it. And a lot of people doing it. And the ones that are doing it, I find, are probably not respected by the leaders in the organization.
Yeah, most organizations, but some, they actually grow people like that. It's awesome.
Like who, Terry? I may go back to work.
that would be a great podcast for you, is to highlight 3 or 4 or 5 companies that's what they do, is that they grow people, and so their sense of well-being is actually better having been in the company, which is a payoff for the company.
I want to wrap her up now, because I'm feeling like we're just going to kind of go round and round, because we've covered the essence of this, and I will do my attempt at summing up, and then I would like you to give your attempt at summing up. And I am enamored with your proposition of weighing and measuring. I think those are very unproductive and disheartening ways to approach life. When we begin to look at it in light of the ordinary, we can see things differently. I am so into that. You know, you've really nailed me on that weighing and measuring. What do you have to say?
I say it's one of the things that I have had to wrestle with, because, you know, just like any of us, whatever industry we're in, you compare yourself. You know, like as a writer, I would read Pat Conroy and I would think, why do I even try?
Oh, me too. Yeah.
Literally. Why would I even try?
Yeah. Which I'm not worthy.
Then I've missed. See, there I am. I'm weighing and measuring. So in other words, this has nothing to do with what it means to be a skilled writer or learning the essences of writing. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with that I have already downgraded my identity and my value to the point that I have no voice And it's about having a voice. And I mean, I love those days. I love the end of the days, even if it's just shitty stuff that happens during the day, where you just have one or two gifts, where you know that the sacred was alive and well, and that you were personally alive and well, and that you had a connection even with another human being that was beneficial. Boom. Drop the mic.
Yeah, and you know, in my study of the mystics, they are all about that. They are all about dismissing this great experience and focusing on the ordinary life. Relationship with God is about relationship on earth. If you don't find it in ordinary everyday life, you do not have the kind of relationship with God that God is seeking with you, because
100%.
Yeah. Well, we have more to say on that, and that's for another subject. But I'd like to wrap it up. Do you have anything you would like to close with?
No, just give yourself the permission to find the sacred in the ordinary and be glad.
I agree. Terry Hershey, it is so good to chat with you on air once again. I miss you. We're gonna have to get back to a few more regular times with you, because you're a special friend and you bring special wisdom to our show and to me personally. And you know, and I have to take a little aside. Here I am. I'm meandering. But our listeners need to know that you were not always in this situation. That there was a day, handful of decades ago, where you were like the guru in Southern California and much of the United States in a certain discipline in the Christian world. I mean, everybody came to see Terry Hershey. Terry Hershey's books were popular, Terry Hershey's speaking. Everybody wanted Terry Hershey. So you experienced fame. You experienced people wanting a piece of you and wanting to be your friend and wanting to be with you and to listen to you. And, you know, you had so many sycophants that you are now, you know, you still have a boatload of people that follow you, love you, respect you, listen to you. But you're on a whole different level. So I should be shutting up. And yet I'm thinking, what was the process for you to make that change? I closed the door and then I opened it again. I'm sorry, listeners.
You take your press way too seriously, and then you get extraordinarily depressed and angry because you can never live up to your press. And then you reread Henry Nouwen's book, The Wounded Healer,
mm-hmm.
and you find unbelievable gladness in doing what you can do in any ordinary day, and you give yourself the permission to be ordinary and normal. And those are good days.
Yeah, I want to pursue that on another podcast, because it's like I used to call it from headlines to breadlines, although you're not gone to breadlines, you've gone from headlines to real life. And it's a fabulous maneuver that very few people, I think, are able to make that transition, and you've done it extraordinarily successfully by listening to your inner voice. And I so appreciate you and appreciate you doing that. Thanks, my friend.
Thanks, Charles.
Okay, and I want you to hang on. I also want to thank our listeners. Please, really, thank you for putting up with us and listening to this. I think this has been a very important show, that there has been good learning for me, I hope for you. And I would ask you to check out our website, thenextchapter.life. And, you know, there are plenty of blogs and podcasts on these subjects, and that we explore how to be the real you in a world that wants unrealness. So until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.